listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we got a fun CarCast show today, right? We're going to talk about some auctions
and
some auction results,
some pro car M1s, and some art car M1s. And,
yeah,
and the story of Peter Perfect, Peter Gregg.
Peter Gregg. Very your thoughts on Andy Warhol?
Interesting. I like Peter Gregg as an artist more than I like Andy. Not as a driver.
Okay.
As an artist.
Right. Well, before we get started, a word from Dodge. Summertime is the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle because Dodge Power Dollars means you get a guaranteed discount. And the math is simple. You get $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle. Doesn't matter. Any 2020 Challenger, 2020 Durango, 2020 Charger, you get the most out of your horsepower with this summer. With $10 off for each horsepower, that means you can roll into your dealer, pick up a Dodge Charger SRT Scat Pack with 485 horsepower, and you'll get $4,850 off. And this summer, Dodge Power Dollars is back on the Dodge Durango as well. So no matter where the summer takes you, the Dodge Durango is here to make every trip this season a breeze. Get more power, you get more off. It's that simple. So hurry into your local Dodge dealer now to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but get it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. This is CarCast, Matt Pearl. That's the moderator, Matt DeAndrea.
Hello, how you
over
doing?
Over there. I'm just looking at my list of things I need, trying to figure stuff out. Makes me mad. I was at home putting up shelves over the weekend, and I went to my drawer. You know, I have 15 of everything, and I couldn't find the fucking magnetic cartridge for my screw gun.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand. I had 1,000 hex head, long, short, whatever, not the magnetic cartridge. And the magnetic cartridge is awesome because you put the screw on it and it stays. And once you get used to using it, you put the screw on the non-magnetic one, it just falls on the floor.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's happening? It's like, what's happening is gravity. You don't have a magnetic screw cartridge. I have 80 of those things all over the place, but not one at my house.
Yeah.
So I made a note. Cartridge.
It's funny because I've seen you here do that. I've seen you go in and grab a drill and just walk over to whatever, something, a door, a wall, piece of wood in the back. And you put the screw on and it falls off. Like, what are you doing? You just put the screw on. It fell off like an idiot. You're like, it's not magnetic.
This is me. If you want to know me at my worst, my position in life is I buy 10 of everything that's cheap and I spread it around. If you want to know, if you want to know, I have nail clippers in my car. I am in the kitchen. I have my drawer in my bathroom. I just spread them around because I don't want to look for 10-cent items. And I hate it.
Yeah.
I have every tool times 10, but yet over the weekend when I opened my tool cabinet in my garage, I have to search all over. There's not one magnetic screw cartridge in there. And thousands of screw tips that would go in the magnetic screw cartridge. And I'd love to blame myself, but it isn't. Somebody used it. Somebody borrowed it. It made its way over to the other shop. But I should have 80 of those things. And I probably have, realistically, I have 13 of them. But none of them are at my goddamn house. So anyway.
All right. Let me tell you guys about Dodge real quick. It's time for Dodge Power Dollars. That means for each horsepower, you'll get $10 off your purchase of a new Dodge Charger, Challenger, or Durango. So come on in for Dodge Power Dollars today for a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah. All right. So cars. We're firing up the Aston Martin after a number of years.
Yeah.
Back there, the battery exploded, but we got a new battery with a boom. And a lot of smoke.
You hear about it all the time going, oh, don't do that. The battery will explode. Or don't work on it without unhooking the battery. And then you think, you know, it's going to ooze out or do something. This exploded.
Yes.
This, like a bomb went off.
Well, Sean, who was in the car, started the car up, said it was louder than an airbag deploying.
Yeah.
That's loud.
I immediately thought of the first scene in Casino when the bomb goes off underneath De Niro's car. And he's like, and at the end, he's like, if it wasn't for the plate, you know, that's on the floorboard of this car, I'd be dead. And I was thinking, where's the battery? It's inside the car. How did Sean not explode? And
right.
It's I don't know, is it behind the seat or under the seat, kind of behind the under rear seat?
It's underneath the passenger seat, which is the car. It's the first year that came out the DB9, and they've had a lot of snafus, electrical and blah, 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 and a lot of stuff. And the bottom line is I've had to take that plate off where the battery is like 15 times easily.
Yeah.
Also, what they don't tell you, and there's certain cars that are this way. Cheap cars, you can just buy and park them for 7 months and start them up. If a car's over $150,000, you can't let it sit for 3 days. It won't start up.
I don't know
what is that? I mean, you can take a fucking well-worn Prius and let it sit for 6 months. It's fine. You take an Aston Martin or Jag or something like a real thoroughbred of a car. You can't park this car. I would park the car for 4 days. It wouldn't start.
Yeah.
Like, so there's that. I don't know what's going on with this car. But anyway, then at some point, somebody tells you. They don't tell you when you buy the car, but at some point you find out, oh, if you're going to park this thing for more than an afternoon, you have to put it on the trickle. You got to plug it in every time. It's essentially like driving a hybrid. It's like driving an electric vehicle. It's like driving an electric car. It's like driving a plug-in electric car because
you have to plug
when
it
you
in
fucking
every time
pull
you
in,
park.
You have to plug it in.
Yeah. Now, in the trunk of that car, there's like a little plug, like a cigarette lighter kind of plug, and that's where you plug the trickle charger into, and it
right,
but for some reason it never seemed to work.
I guess
it's been here before where that thing's like plugged into the wall. It doesn't work. It doesn't do enough charge, or it doesn't I don't know exactly what it's almost like. It's not the right type of battery, or the charger doesn't work for a gel cell battery or an AGM battery or something. Like, I don't know what it was, but it never seemed to really work well.
Right. Well, it had enough juice to blow up the battery.
It did. It was good. It was in the box, the steel box. Otherwise, I mean, sure, Sean would have got damaged, but more importantly, the leather and everything in the interior of that car would have been ruined.
I know. So
Sean
anyway.
Would have healed.
We got a new battery, and the car's firing up. We still have to see what goes on after that because it's been parked for a long time. But either way, that car's getting fired up. We got the Chris spiced up our lap over with the different drummer car, so that looks better. We'll put that. Eventually, we'll get the whole thing whacked together with Nate and all the different angles and stuff and shove that out there.
Yeah, that's on the CarCast YouTube.
Cars at auctions, been some pretty good sales lately, as well as a car coming up that we're very interested in. First things first, my clairvoyance, a BMW M1 Pro car came up. I think it was at RM.
RM, yeah. RM.
I love BMW M1 Pro cars. I saw it. It looked like a car with some decent history, and it looked like a real deal. And the estimate was 600 to 800.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Matt, and I said, what?
You said, I don't see this thing being 6 to 8. I think this car is more than that. This should be... I forgot the exact number. This thing should be almost $1 million.
I said eight. I said the estimate should not be 6 to 8. It should be 8 to 1 million.
Right. And the car looked good, presented well, was red.
Now, what percentage of the time does a car go past? What percentage of the time does a car go past the low reserve?
Yeah. So it's pretty rare. Especially on the ones with a reserve price, and you're saying past the estimate.
The low estimate, yeah. I would say...
And a lot of times it would be like, oh, it's creeping up on it, but when you add the fee, it's definitely within the range.
I would say most cars end hammering with the fee at about the low range, or sometimes it'll just get past the low range.
Yeah, I would agree.
Estimate.
I would agree. There are a few exceptions.
How often
does
it get past the top end?
You know, there's a few that pop up.
The top end on cars over 500 grand. Yeah. I feel like it happens with an NSX or Z car every once in a while.
Yeah.
When the thing is over $500,000, the range, I don't see them getting past the upper end. That's about 4% of the time.
Right, especially when there's cars with comps out there. You know,
right.
Like we can pull a, you know, an SL Gullwing and say, yeah, we kind of know where this car is going to be almost every time. And, oh, you know, sometimes over the years it creeps a little up, creeps a little down, but you can see it start to happen. It's never really, hey, this is $1 million car, and it just went for 1.9. Like, it would have
right.
to be.
But I
really
said,
crazy.
I think it's more 8 to 1 million.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They don't trade hands that often. I don't know that much. I love the car, but I don't know much about them. But all in, the thing went for 913.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew something.
And you got to be kicking yourself about that art car years and years ago. Is that Bonhams?
Yeah.
See, but they threw a wrench into it because they tricked you with the estimate, with the low ball estimate. This is what we're talking about, right? Is I forgot what they said the car was going to be, and it went for way more. You're like, I don't see how it could go for this much.
It went all in for like $856.
Yeah.
So it's still cheaper than an M1 Pro Car is today. Now, that was almost 10 years ago. That was 2011.
But what was their estimate? You need to call the guy and ask them.
Their estimate was $450 to $600, and I called Bonham, and I was like, what do you know about that? I called because I was curious. And the reason I called is because $450 or $500 at the time was about what a Pro Car was going for.
Mm-hmm.
This was an M1 Pro Car art car. Frank Stella is the artist, still alive, and he had paintings that would sell for millions of dollars. So I was like, this guy's got paintings that sells for millions of dollars. This is a Frank Stella art car. Why is it not higher? And the guy at Bonham said, I don't know. We don't think it's going to get to the low end of the thing. I'd be surprised if it got to 400.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. Could that be true? And then it just blasted right past 400.
Quick.
It went right past the upper. The upper was six. It went right past that. And I probably didn't have the money for it back then, but looking back on it, would have been a great investment. You'd have an art car. And I wanted it. And it just blew, shot right past the upper end, and it just kept going. I was like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah. And then it kind of takes the wind out of your sails, but also makes you feel like you're really overpaying now because there was an estimate, and you talk to a guy and he says it's going to go low, and he didn't think the money was going to be there. So in your head, you're walking into it, especially when you're in an auction or prepping to go to an auction, and you're like, it's 4 to 6. It's
kind of an interesting psychological experiment, which is like, I called the place. I went, what do you think? And the guy went, I don't think it's even going to get to the low estimate.
Yeah.
And obviously that stuck in my head. Also, it was at Bonham at the Quail, and they didn't have a lot of real estate, and they had a tent. And it was like parked up the back hill. It was like backed up the back hill, but it was like a dirt hill.
Yeah.
And it was covered in dust. When I went and looked at it, and there was nobody around it. So I was like, went and looked at him. I said, this car's just sitting here. Like, nobody wants this car. And I, like, talked to the place in Indiana that rebuilt it and blah, blah, blah. And I did all the research on it. And then I left to go do a race. I had to be at the track. But I had Sandy behind on the phone, and he just kept going, oh, no, now it's, oh, seven, oh, now it's past 7. It's at 725. Oh, 775. And it's just like... right past. I was like, oh, I thought I had this whole scenario where I was just going to steal this car for 400 grand, but no such luck.
It's actually interesting that happened and you experienced that, because when we went to go buy the Newman 935, I don't even remember what the estimate was on that car, but we kept running scenarios going, well, what if it's this? What if
it's
this?
It was like 4.5 to 5.5. I was like 4.5 to 5.5 or somewhere in there.
And then it never really became what's the car worth anymore, because we had done so many auctions at this point. It was just about what could you go to, like what cars could we sell, how can we buy it, and how could we get to the point of like what number made sense financially at that point, right? Mm-hmm. They could have said any number. We would be like, that's what the car's worth now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I kind of feel like without the M1 Pro Car experience, we wouldn't have had the same, I don't know, mindset, the same attitude on the 935. Because the 935, you could go, well, it could go four, it could go four or five, it could go five, it could go, you know, it could go more. And now it's just about, well, at what point does it lead to divorce and selling the house and the kids go to public school for the rest of their lives so you could get the car?
Well, you know, my for the art car, people were like, well, how are you going to drive an art car?
Yeah.
And I was like, we're going to take the front clip and the rear clip and I guess the doors, and we're just going to recreate the art, and I'll put it on the car, and then we'll take the real stuff and we'll move it away.
Yeah.
That'll leave the roof. You know, so as long as I don't roll the car,
yeah,
I could drive it. That was kind of part of my plan.
Which is interesting because these days now with car wraps and stuff, you could probably just print out, you could just photograph and print the artwork and then just put it on a wrap. It'd be much easier to do now.
Yeah. I don't know where you find a clip for, for M1 Pro Car. But,
well, Kennebo's sell you one for the price of the car.
All right.
What'd you pay, $800? He's like, I can sell you a clip for $800.
I think it was like $856. I have no idea where that car. That car was like parked at the Guggenheim, I think, before, yeah. And blah, blah, blah.
Well, the Peterson a while back did an art car exhibit. I don't remember which ones were in there, but there were several BMW art cars in there.
The other thing is most of them look like shit because these stoned, lazy, impressionist artists who fucking suck just like told their assistant to fucking slap paint on it with a brush, you know, like, look, come on, Andy Warhol's a fucking hack, you know. You don't want any of these idiots painting your car. Of course they look like shit because they're like they're modern art guys.
Yeah.
And modern art guys, they're really like, it's basically, there's a whole class of artists who I would file under the heading of DJ Khaled, which is like, oh, you want to be a rock star, you just fucking suck. It kind of started with the Beastie Boys. Everyone hates me for this, but they suck. You know what I mean? But they want to be rock stars, but they suck. And this art is like for guys who want to be artists and get blown by fucking artist groupies, but don't have any talent.
Yeah.
They can't do what Rembrandt does. Like when you go see the Dutch masters. Now, my whole thing is, hey, paint like the Dutch masters and then go ahead and fucking slop paint all over your fucking car canvas and I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, Beastie Boys, you go play a good song with your instruments and then go do the shit you do. But you don't do it. It's not like DJ Khaled goes out there like Alicia Keys or something and sits down at the piano and cranks something out and then decides to do shit music.
Right.
Right.
Oh, Frank Stella.
Is there a couple of Frank Stella ones? His paintings suck too. Like his paintings are just like, pfft, you know, like I suck as an artist.
Andy Warhol car.
Yeah, he just got his assistant to throw paint at the car. So they're all shitty looking. What would be cool is if
a 535. Stop.
No, you know who you want to do your art car? You want Pete Brock to do your art car.
Yeah,
not these fucking stoners. Guys are fucking hacks.
Yeah. Boy, some of these suck.
But the Frank Stella M1 looked pretty good, like considering the class it was in. You have every picture there except for the Frank Stella M1.
Yeah, I know. That's the Wikipedia for BMW art car, but
his car looked kind of decent. It had a, I mean, it's still not, look, the M1 Pro Car in the BMW livery is so much better than anything Frank Stella those fucking hacks could come up with. It's 1,000 times better.
Right.
But his one looked the closest to like the M1. See, it had sort of M1 vibes to it. Like it had a little bit of the BMW M1.
Right, it's got the M stripes on it combined with his with his spin on it. So yeah, he did a combination of, well, what is the car and what is it supposed to be? And it's an M1. It's a pro car. It's a race
car.
He
basically just ripped off the M1. He was too stoned and lazy, so he just told his assistant, look at the M1 badge and kind of do that. Am I making this shit up?
Corolla show logo?
Yes, that's how we did it.
That's how we did it.
Yeah, look at the fucking M badge. You're not going to do better than that.
We're just going to the garage and look at any of the VRE cars. Go, just make Adam's name look like that.
Go do that. Well, the BRE cars, the artistry in the BRE cars so much better than any of the art cars.
Yeah.
A million times better than any of the art cars.
That's the CarCast logo.
This is basically us as a society falling apart, like idiots buying into this shit. But either way, the car's got to be worth millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what it's worth. I don't know. Is it worth $3 million? Like, is it worth $2 million? I don't know. There are not many of them.
And I haven't seen another art car come up in a while, so I can't really say, like, what's the most recent comp for one of those.
All right. Oh, yeah. There are no comps. Let me hit JB Weld quick 15 seconds here. Epoxy adhesive brand used by both pros and DIYers. Trusted. For over 50 years, available at jbweld.com and retailers everywhere. Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, at Michaels, and more. All right, so there's no comps for those cars. They're super expensive. And my only question is that car worth $5 million or is it worth $3 million? Is it worth $2.5 million? I mean, it sold for $850 almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, that's a good question. But speaking of auctions, so it wasn't too long ago, just a few weeks ago, Gooding did their online auction, and they set a record for just an online sale, which was like $3 million for a 275 GTB, the white one.
Mm-hmm.
And then RM just did their auction, and then they just beat it, and with the Ferrari 550 Pro Drive, I think, race car. It's like 4-point-something million.
Almost 4.3, I think, like 4.2 something.
Yeah, 4.29. 4.29, which is a cool car, badass-looking car. Interesting that was the one that pulled all the money. But what a good, you know, again, we've been telling this story for almost a decade now. But again, with the racing cars, right? The racing cars got the best stories, and I mean, not always, but always the good stories. This is a good-looking car, presented well, and $4.3 million for an online sale. I mean, I guess it's something to brag about a little bit, going, hey, it was purchased online. But I don't know if there's that much difference between that and the guys that would phone bid in a car. And you know, all the big auctions have the phone bid. So,
you know, with the advent of hundreds of digital photos and underneath the car and inside the car and everything and, you know, pretty good records of who's maintaining it, when it was last raced, and stuff like that. I don't know. Do you really even need to see the car in person? Like, how much more would you glean from seeing the car in person?
Yeah.
It kind of used to be that way. It used to be when there was an old Lamborghini 400 or 350 or something, even a Mira, and there's a couple pictures of it up on the website or in the catalog or something, and then you'd go get up on it and you'd go, oh, this car's rough, when you got up on it. But not so much anymore. Now, with the digital and the high def, and
they're pretty well photographed now. I think people are starting to pick up on that. And we're definitely more into photographing the flaws as much as its good features, so we can just be candid about it and go, hey, this is where we are with the car.
Right.
But I don't know. It was interesting. Interesting auction, interesting thing. Pete Brock's a hang glider hauler van, which was a wacky V8 swap. It was an interesting. It's always got a little bit of Pete Brock. He's hot rodded a lot of things. That's the thing about Pete Brock. He's hot rodded a lot of things and work with guys to hot rod things. He came up with the ideas and design things. But this thing had a V8 swap and a weird sort of vent in the back and giant radiator in the front. And it was interesting. I don't know. It sold for like $25,000.
Yeah, all in. I think. Brock, again, I have the BRE Transport, the first Hino brought in the United States, and he got with Max Belchowski, and he put the V8 in the Hino. You know what I mean? So he was an engine swapper. He was obviously he came from Shelby, or he came from GM, and then he went to Shelby. So it was big big time into let's get a bigger engine in this smaller vehicle, right? And although you do remember the description on that thing that bothered me, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it said aluminum, all aluminum.
It just said aluminum V8 Pontiac engine in it.
I'm not sure where they're getting the all aluminum part, but
they didn't say all. They just said aluminum Pontiac V8, which to me means all aluminum.
Yeah.
I think they screwed up. I can't imagine that thing has aluminum block. Yeah. Back in the day?
I talked to Alexander Weaver at RM, and I said, what do you think of this thing? Did you drive it? And he said, I drove it. I thought it was going to pop a wheelie. Scared the hell out of me. The thing was nuts. Nuts. And I said, oh, all right, that's good. He's probably blasting down to Culver City in that thing.
So funny. So I have hypervigilance. So I read things or I see things or I look at things and then things pop out to me. So we both read the description. To me, they said aluminum V8. And I was like, whoa. I heard like brakes in my head. Like what year? who got an aluminum V8? Like back in the day?
Yeah. And why would you need it?
No, this is where my problem is. I have two problems. A, I trust people. So when people write descriptions of stuff, I go, they must know what they're doing. They wrote aluminum V8. And then I try to work it out where I'm like, well, it's a VW van and it's got the engine in the rear and you pulled an engine out that was 161 pounds, and you're going to replace it with a 425-pound engine. Why not make it an aluminum engine? Like, Pete Brock would be smart to put an aluminum block in the back of his VW van.
And it kind of sounds like a Pete Brock thing. Like, he'd consider that.
Right. But who had an aluminum? Did Pontiac? It was a Pontiac engine, right?
Was it Pontiac?
Right?
Buick?
Oh, Buick or Pontiac? Buick or Pontiac a V8, but where did you get an aluminum block? And I just think they said aluminum. I think they just meant the heads.
I think they meant the heads.
Either way, it bothered me. I had to call you and voice my concern. But
I remember.
I got up this morning.
What's this bullshit aluminum?
I got up this morning and somebody tweeted me. So I was watching The Love Boat the other night, as I always do. And me and Drew watched The Love Boat. And they were doing the scene where they were like walking by the pool and they're talking, and that's what the scene was. And in the background, they always have the extras just sitting there around the pool, the good looking people having their drinks with the umbrellas in it and everything. And in the background, there was a chick sitting by the pool, like her back turned, and she had like 3 inches of ass crack hanging out over her bikini, you know?
Uh-huh.
And back then, I know from arguing with censors, you can't have that. But back then, they would just shoot stuff, and whatever was in the back was in the back.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't care. And the chick had, like, a lot of ass crack hanging out. And it was deep in the back, but I still focused on it. And I rewinded it. It was like, how much ass crack? She's showing a lot of ass crack. And then I woke up this morning, someone had tweeted me, I was watching Love Boat, and now I'm addicted to it. And this chick had this ass crack. And I was like, I know. That's what I was staring at.
Yeah.
I was laser focused on her ass crack.
I love this is your version of dad porn at this point.
Dad
it's the
porn.
Love Boat, 3 inches of ass crack with a bikini bottom.
Well, I know specifically because when we were...
You're reminding it going back.
When we were doing the man show, I said to him, we would argue with him all the time. Like, we'd show ass crack and they'd go, that's too much ass crack. And we'd go, well, you can show ass crack, right? And they go, yeah, you can show ass crack, like the plumber's crack or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, well, how much? And they're like, We don't know. And I'm like, well, you got to tell us when to stop with the ass. Because ass crack is fine, but at some point it becomes bare ass, and that's not fine. So where is it? Is the shorts move down? Where do you stop?
Yeah.
And they said 3/4 ass crack.
Oh.
And we said, okay. And so we invented 3/4 ass crack shorts. And put them on me and all the juggies as well. All right. So what other cars in the auction? Sorry.
There was an NSX that you mentioned, which was interesting because that one, it seemed like the estimate was fair. And it was like a week-long auction or a few days auction. And it seemed to like basically exceed the estimate mm-hmm. 2 days into it. It was a mm-hmm. little bit of a bring a trailer moment where they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, we're a little hot out the gate with the estimates. But that was kind of cool to see NSXs are still doing that. And it was mm-hmm. a good blue color. Mm-hmm. But it looked interesting. But mm-hmm. The other thing that came up that you and I have been talking about a little bit is there's a new auction company that's coming out called Stratus. And we're going to talk to these guys at some point soon. They're still putting all of their stuff together. And they're going to be an online auction. And it's sort of a hybrid between, let's say, the Bring and Trailers and Goodings and RM and Goodings and Bring a Trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Fee structure is going to kind of fall into the middle. And they're going to do a few curated cars at a time. And the one car that keeps coming up that's definitely of interest is this chassis number 2, Nissan 300ZX, one of the Cunningham chassis cars. You have chassis 7?
Clayton Cunningham.
Yeah.
I think I have 8.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's funny because I thought 8, and when they sent me the description for the number 2, it said there were 7 made.
Oh.
So and I thought you had 8, but didn't we go down this path where one of them was 2 chassis? Like, you know,
yeah.
They took a number
also,
1.
Also, somebody said there's another
8.
V8 car in Japan, which I found curious.
Yeah,
I don't know
it's
anything
Japan,
anymore.
Nobody cares.
Right. But either way. Yeah, Clayton Cunningham, iconic red, white, and blue. You guys have seen these cars. Steve Millen's car.
The car you have is the 1994, and you're right. And we've talked about it before. And the Steve Millen car is the one he won Le Mans. That one's obviously worth a ton of money. He still has it. He's done a bunch of vintage racing with it. So if you watch any of the YouTube videos from a few years ago of Laguna Seca, you'll see him racing that car.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's going to be interesting to see this car. This car is chassis number 2,
mm-hmm.
and I forgot what the description was. It had
has a lot of races over a number of
several years.
Like 89, 90, 91. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it ran for like 3 years. It has got a lot of races. It's got a little Sebring experience and maybe a little Daytona experience, I think. But
I think twice it's been.
But it did okay, but it didn't win its class at Sebring
yeah.
or Daytona, and that's kind of the
maybe like 11th at Sebring.
Overall,
yeah,
right,
and it did win a couple of things, but not necessarily a very well known, you know, in the auction world, a valuable track, if you will, for lack of a better term. But it won a few things.
Well, I told young Matt, who resisted at the beginning, but has now come around, which is all the Watkins Glens and the all the Poconos and all the Mid-Americas or Road Americas and stuff.
Yeah.
That's all good experience, but it's really Le Mans, Daytona, Sebring. And you would trade it all your podiums at mm-hmm. Laguna Seca and all around the country, you would trade it all for like a win at Sebring. And you would trade that all in one of your kids for a win at Le Mans. Like that's mm-hmm. all people want anymore. I don't know if you call it fair or unfair, but they just want to go, this car won Sebring or this car won Daytona. You know, that's when they really want to say it won Le Mans.
Yeah.
So that's really the brass ring is Le Mans and everything else. So you talk about these cars, you go, they got a lot of history and it's all good because it's always like, hey, 41 starts and 9 podiums and 3 first place. And it's, yeah, but it's all Brainerd. You know what I mean? And if it is, it's better than nothing, but you'd rather have the Sebring and the guy up
on
the podium
just
at Sebring.
Yeah, even the one Daytona or the one Sebring win. Or,
right. That's, I don't know why. I don't know if it's going to change. I don't know if it meant anything a while ago, but now it is.
Well, look, the collector car market starts to find ways to differentiate cars and create value or something, or remove value, if you will. And this is how it's kind of working out. And if everybody's sort of on the same path with this, then then it holds water. And if we're saying Le Mans cars are the valuable cars, that's, you know, like, as you said, the brass ring, it's fine because everybody agrees. Everybody who's buying and selling these cars agrees. Like, a Le Mans win does add a jump in value.
I'll give you an interesting thing I was reading about. Chris has a DNF at Sebring due to overheating, but it ran again at Sebring and I think came in 11th overall or something like that. But anyway, the M1 Pro Art car we're talking about, I think was driven by Peter Gregg at Le Mans before it became an art car. So it has Le Mans history as well. I didn't win its class or anything, but it ran Le Mans.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was researching it, looking to buy and stuff, Le Mans never came up.
Oh.
So 11 years ago, it's all Le Mans talk now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
9 years ago, right about this time, when I was like, it would have been this week, like literally like right in here, right in this time.
Yeah, they're Monterey.
I was 9 years ago, I was researching it, and the Le Mans history and Peter Gregg and other racing history just really wasn't entered into the conversation. So that's a proof positive of what Le Mans.
Yeah, there must have been two people in the room that did that same research because they were bidding that car up.
They didn't care about Le Mans back then.
You're right about Peter Gregg. It raced in the 76 24 Hours of Le Mans. And the reason it wasn't in that list is it's not an official art car by BMW. It's the only art car painted by one of their factory artists, but it wasn't commissioned by BMW when he painted it.
Oh, and that's probably why the estimate was lower. Yeah. So Peter Gregg, I think, now he's the one who famously got into an accident at Le Mans, but not during the race, like on a driving Le Mans, and got into a bad accident and like started having like double vision and stuff like that. Do you know the Peter Gregg story?
No.
Peter Gregg was like one of the winningest Porsche drivers ever. He was like unbeatable, the Porsche. And he was going to Le Mans for whatever time, fifth time or whatever it was. And he got into an accident on the road and like bonked his head and was like having vision problems or something. And tried to continue his racing career where he was initially kind of unbeatable and could not really compete anymore because of this alleged, I'm not saying alleged, I don't know all the nuts and bolts, but he was having problems because like a head trauma, and he killed himself. And he was this unbeatable, like kind of playboy, had like Porsche dealerships and...
Yeah, so I have 4 overall wins at Daytona 24, 2 Trans Am Championships, 6 IMSA.
Hold on, 4 overall wins at Daytona? Oh, yeah. Peter Gregg.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, same and they called him M1 car. Sorry. What? No, I'm super angry.
They called him Peter Perfect. He's a Harvard grad, also famous for having owned the Brumos Porsche.
Dealer, right?
Yeah, and then...
Not the Brumos Porsche dealership.
Having owned Brumos Porsche, where he sponsored and raced with the iconic Curly Haywood.
Brumos, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
His career at just 40 years old was soaring, and then a hitchhiker traveling along Highway A1A near Jacksonville found his lifeless body, and beside him, a .38 pistol and a briefcase. Inside, along with a receipt for the gun, was Gregg's suicide note written upon it, "I just don't enjoy life anymore," addressed to his new wife, his ex-wife, his 2 kids, and his business partner, with a note that detailed his downward spiral. It was Gregg's ceaseless double vision that pushed him to the edge.
Guy wins everything, Harvard grad, like good-looking man about town, fucking kills himself at 40 because he's not enjoying life anymore.
There's a doc for you.
Jeez, I'm going to put all these guys on suicide alert. Max Zapata, I'm sorry, but if Peter Gregg killed himself, you got to kill yourself.
I know.
Tell Matt, tell Gary, call Kalen, tell everyone.
That, really opened my eyes.
I want to go, hey, fellas, if this guy can kill himself, you guys should have killed yourself in junior high.
Well, when you peaked. When you peaked, then it's down. You have to peak, and then it's got to be down.
But what if you never peak?
Well.
Hold on, Matt. You're good for now, but keep your phone on.
Right?
Oh, man. I got so many people I have to explain. They have to kill themselves based on this Peter Gregg situation. All right. And Chris, let me do it. It's going to sound weird coming from you.
Are you sure? I mean, my eyesight's fine.
No, I know. But you see the accomplishments the man was having?
Yeah.
And he still killed himself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's look. I don't want to be negative. Let's just talk about it off the air.
Okay.
So that pro car raced at Le Mans with Peter Gregg. I don't know how it finished, but Peter Gregg commissioned. So Peter Gregg, so it's interesting. It's not officially commissioned BMW pro car,
yeah,
which hurts it a little bit. But Peter Gregg, who's a legend, got a commissioned artist,
yeah,
and told him to do it.
Yes, and the Peter Gregg story makes it kind of special.
Even gives it a cooler story.
It does, because now it makes it like the one special one or the one unique one, for better or worse.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, well, you can figure out what the, how it did it.
It said Peter Gregg.
How it did it. At M1. Yeah, P.H. Gregg. All right, let me hit Madison Reed, Mister. Love this stuff. Madison Reed. Well, you guys know Madison Reed has been doing the hair coloring for women for a long time, and now they're expanding into the male stuff, and I use this stuff. I took, it comes with a little kit, and you put the gloves on, and you put a little dollop, you open a little packet, a little Mylar packet, and you put a little dollop on your hand, you just kind of rub it, and just kind of rub your fingers through your hair. And then you do the activator. It's the second thing. You do that, and you just go rub it through, and you let it sit for 10 minutes, and then you just rinse it out, and it looks natural. You get a little more pepper and a little less salt, and you get a nice sort of natural look, not that shoe polish look. You get a sort of clean, natural look, mm-hmm. and that's what you get with the Madison Reed Mister, right, Matt?
Yeah, go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam.
All right. So did it say what it did at Le Mans? Nah. Unfortunately, if it doesn't tell you how it did, it probably didn't finish.
Didn't finish.
Yeah, I think in this day and age, even if it finishes Le Mans, you would mention that, right? Even if you finished in 41st place, you would still mention it. It finished at Le Mans. Anyway, so other cars from the auction that we thought were interesting.
I'm the Daytona. I thought was kind of cool. The Ferrari Daytona, the blue. Was it a race car? Yeah, I think it was a racing car.
Yeah,
I forgot what that one went for, but that was a pretty cool car as well. I don't know. We always pick out the race cars out of there, but
I think it either went all in at 1.9 or hammered at 1.9. But was it a no sale? I don't know if it sold. The thing about the Daytonas, whether they're in street trim or race trim, people have high hopes for those cars.
Yeah,
they're always like the estimate is 6 to 8. On the street cars, and like this one hammered at 485. Like, and then the next auction comes around. It's like it's 550 to 750. It's like now it hammered at 505.
Yeah.
Like, somebody please understand that for some reason, you know what it is? That car's a lot of car. And a Toyota 2000 is not a lot of car. And somebody keeps thinking, why should a Toyota 2000 be the same price as a Daytona?
Right.
And I'm with them. It's got a V. It's literally has twice the engine.
Yeah.
It's literally a V12. I think a 4-liter V12 versus a 2-liter straight six. Like, it's twice everything on that car. Yeah. Why is it the same price? And the answer is, I don't know, but it is. So stop deciding that car is $650. And the race cars are so beautiful, and in race trim, they're awesome. And Newman drove one at Daytona back in the day and blah, blah, blah. And you just go, I want this car to be worth $2.5 million. And it's like, it's worth 1.9. It's like, but look at it.
Yeah.
It's like, I know, but it just isn't. That's the price. It's such a cool piece.
It definitely caught our attention going through it. You see the pictures and you're like, boom, it presents well. But
and I wish it was worth 2.5, but it's 1.9. And I think it was a no sale, as I recall.
I don't recall on that one. We can go back and
While you're figuring that out, that one. I should just make an addendum. So Peter Gregg actually drove the CSL Frank Stella at Le Mans, and that's how he met Frank Stella and had him commission the M1. So there was that was written kind of weird that he drove in Le Mans, but with the other BMW.
Oh, so he showed the other BMW.
Did that M1 drive at Le Mans?
No, it didn't. No,
oh,
so
good.
He drove the CSL at Le Mans, and then he met Frank Stella and liked him so much he had him paint an M1.
So maybe that's the story.
By the way, did they? Max Zapata. Are they intentionally confusing when they do that? Le Mans, and then Frank drove the BMW at Le Mans. It's because I walked away with, oh, he drove this car at Le Mans.
Yeah.
And so did Chris.
Yeah.
So are they doing that to you on
they
purpose?
They totally are. I'm reading these things. Like, I could buy a Sentra off an auction and be like, Nissan, Le Mans champion.
Right.
Car company.
It's funny because we talked about that earlier in the week. We went even about the Nissan that's coming up for auction. Nissan was very competitive in the late 90s or late 80s, early 90s, and still in won Le Mans. So the story on this car coming up for
Millen
auction.
Millen won Le Mans. Yeah. Still in his company, but yeah.
Is the overall story of all of the cars, right? The seven or eight chassis of cars. And then you can start to break down this one. And it does get a little confusing. And I'm sure 9 years ago, you read Peter Gregg and the artist
I didn't
and
really,
Lamar.
I didn't really read much about it, or maybe this is 9 years old. The you know what it was is Lamar a short 9 years ago was neither here nor there. It's like, do you want the car? What's the car worth? The Lamar part didn't factor in. That's like what I'm saying. You know.
Yeah.
Our friend Bruce Myers had bought a bunch of cars.
Scooping up all those cars.
They had Le Mans history. No one cared about Le Mans. Now everyone cares about Le Mans.
I feel like he kind of made Le Mans. Like he started telling people Le Mans was where it's at. Le Mans is where it's at. Like, you know, you got to start controlling the narrative a little bit.
All right. So should we play? So we don't know the history of this car. I mean, we don't know its race history.
I'm still looking.
All right.
Let me tell you about Geico while he gets into that. Right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. And that's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You're not going to find a deal like this again, and there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. If you go by October 7th, go to geico.com and save an extra 15%. Again, that's geico.com.
All right. You want to you got another car there?
I'm out of auction cars, but one thing that I thought was kind of interesting on talking about racing heritage is Ford has introduced a new graphics package basically for the Ford GT. The 2021 GT is going to be offered with an optional GT heritage package. They've done a few of these. They did the Gulf livery. They did the red and white car. This one is based off of the 1966 24 Hours of Daytona, the winning GT40 MK2 car, the Daytona car. And we'll get some images of it, but it's the white, the black, and
Ken Miles?
It's the Ken Miles, yeah, driven by Ken Miles and Lloyd Ruby.
White and black.
Yes.
Is that the one that won Le Mans?
It won Daytona.
I know, but the black one won Le Mans later that
the
year.
The car's
right?
Mostly white.
Oh, mostly white.
It's
oh,
mostly,
okay.
There you go. There
I got
you go.
It. I got it. The mostly black one is the one that won Le Mans later on. Well,
also,
that's cool.
I feel like if it won Le Mans, they would have said Le Mans winning instead of Daytona
that's
winning.
That's where I was a little confused as well. But
yeah.
is this all Ken Miles sort of inspired?
This is Ken Miles inspired, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Just keep going with the Ken Miles thing. I love it with the red interior and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's tough to tell in the photos, but the hood is asymmetrical black, and the portion of it is it's black, and it looks almost a grayish, and that's the raw carbon fiber that they're doing, which obviously you can
well,
do
this
on
is going
like
to be
this.
Awesome. I'm not sure about the meatball, but with the number.
Yeah.
But other than that, this is spectacular, and orange is the new black, as they say. It's a lot of orange going around.
I don't know. It's kind of cool, and it's kind of unique, and I keep thinking back to a couple of recent text messages and conversations I've had with Ken Lingenfelter. Mm-hmm. He's on the list for a Ford GT, and he's asked several times. I haven't put it in yet because I don't know what color to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, now if you didn't make your order, Ken.
Yeah, that's the color.
You want the Ken Miles version.
All right. You want to play the hypothetical road trip game?
Yeah, let's do it.
You've got, do we have an intro to that, Max Pana?
The hypothetical stoplight game.
Oh, stoplight.
Brought to you by J.B. Weld.
Well, I'm in such a hurry tonight, but I'm gonna have to stop at this light. On the left, I got a van with big wheels. On the right, I got a pickup and teal. Van to the left of me, teal truck to the right. Here I am, stuck at a light behind you.
All right, the hypothetical stoplight game. Here we go. Matt.
Yeah.
You notice a leak in your gas tank, but luckily, you can repair that using JB Weld. They have 8-step instructions on their website. All you need is some sandpaper and the JB Weld steel stick. So you go to AutoZone to grab some of that. And you pull up to a stoplight. You have to choose between two lanes. Which lane gets you to JB Weld faster? Round one.
As I'm about to burst into flames, for sure.
Yeah.
You're taking a different car.
Hopefully I'm in an Uber, maybe. It's just something.
We want to fix it.
Time is of the essence. All right.
Yeah.
You have you could pull up behind either the lowered El Camino with the flame paint job,
mm-hmm.
or the raised Chevy Silverado with a cracked bumper and truck nuts.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. This is an easy one, and I'm definitely not wrong about this, but you're definitely going to get behind the El Camino. This guy with the flame paint job has performance on the brain, and it's much lighter than the off-road truck. So I'm going to get behind this guy. He's going to jump the line on the monster truck, and I'm going to get in front of the monster truck, and I'm not going to burst into flames on my way to AutoZone. El Camino with flames.
Sorry, that's incorrect. The guy, that's a low rider. Low, what's the second word? And? Slow. Yeah. That's the Krita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, low and slow. 60 seconds. Low rider, Donnie. Remember, he's
right.
Prepped.
Low and slow. Sorry. Let's do the next.
All right, next round. You could either pull up behind. The Ford Explorer has an old K-Rock sticker on the back. Also, that fake baseball breaking through the window decal.
Oh, yeah. Those were smart.
Yeah. Or you could pull out behind a murdered out Cadillac XTS with elbow rims. You know what elbow rims are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I showed Adam a video of those. The Swangas.
They gotta be illegal. Why are those legal?
I have no idea.
I have no idea how they're legal either.
Okay. Because no one saw them before, they'll be illegal. It's like lawn darts. Someone invented lawn darts, and then somebody watched lawn darts, and now they're illegal. But they can't make things illegal before they're invented.
Yeah.
All right.
Did we just see this recently? We saw this recently. Maybe it was in Chicago?
Oh, was it in Chicago that we saw?
Was some guy rolling around with these in Chicago?
They were a big Midwest thing.
But it wasn't like through... You know what? We were eating dinner, like on the road. We saw,
yeah,
with these things. listen, I'm gonna get behind the Cadillac with these rims because I just feel like if I try to pass the Cadillac, I run the risk of tearing the side of my car apart. So the XTS, I'm gonna get for safety's sake at least. I'm gonna get, but I'm probably this guy's gonna pull ahead in front of the. In front of the Explorer.
Yeah, sorry. Again, it's low and it's slow. This is a close cousin to the low rider.
Yeah.
These guys are running on 30 series tires. They can't afford to hit a crack in the road. They're going to bust up those probably a Dayton wire. What are these rims called again?
Elbow rims, but also called Swangas. Or Swangas, I don't know.
S-W-A-N-G-A-S.
Do you attach it to the Dayton? I don't understand.
It's a spoked rim that comes way out with a look.
I literally have a picture of an XTS with one of these on here. It looks so dumb.
Max Pat, you ever seen the James Bond? Have you ever seen what James Bond's car can do to another car? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, of course.
James Bond had axles that came out with the spinners on it that tore up the side
of the car. That's what I was thinking.
Right. That's exactly what this is. So you got to get around this guy, and you got to go fast, and that's why you lost this. All right, we'll do one more.
All right, last round. You're driving up to Monterey to get some JB Weld, and you see one of those Huracans with the Lamborghini Club decal.
Yeah.
We always have those guys.
They're doing their bull run. Sure.
So you have a Huracan, probably trying to catch up. We don't know. Or the Tesla Model 3 with dealer plates. Who do you get behind?
Oh man, the Model 3 or the Lamborghini. I'm gonna get behind the Lamborghini. It sounds better. I think it's faster. I think that guy likes to show off a little bit more. I don't think he's one of these hippie tree huggers driving the Tesla around like Prius owners.
True.
Chris, like Prius owners.
Yeah,
I'm gonna get behind the Lamborghini guy. He's in a mood.
Sorry, and I'll tell you why. Because these guys on these bull runs, especially when they're going up to 5 and they're getting into the Bay Area or they're getting into Northern California, these guys have been pulled over 2 or 3 times by now. So this guy's he's shell-shocked.
He's been emotionally destroyed.
He's been pulled over 2 or 3 times on this run already. Also, and I thought you would know better, obviously the Prius is going to go 0 to 30 faster than that Huracan does. It's an electric car. It's a Tesla,
but I mean, love that you don't care because it doesn't make a difference between
what
Tesla
I say
and
was?
Prius.
You said Prius.
Oh, no, I was thinking about your Prius. Yeah, it's a Tesla 3. No, I know it is. It's a Tesla 3, and it's got immediate torque. It's got 100% torque off the line, and I don't know if it's faster 0 to 60. Oh, it could give it a run, but 0 to 30, I bet the Tesla takes the Lambo Huracan. That's 0 to 30, not 30 to 60. So,
who do you think wants the world to know they're driving that car more, the Lamborghini owner or the Tesla owner?
I think the Lambo guy, and also the Lambo guy, he might throw a couple of revs before they take off.
He's got to do a little peacocking.
Just before they get moving. Yeah. So sorry.
Okay.
All right, let's bring it on.
The hypothetical stoplight game.
Here I am, stuck at a light behind you. Stuck at a light behind you. Here I am, stuck at a light behind you.
Brought to you by JB Weld.
All right, speaking of JB Weld, you got projects you want to get through, big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's got the word ordinary right in the title. You need strong, you need better. You need JB Weld. They're a proud sponsor, and we're proud to have them aboard. They're great. I know the owner. I hung out with these guys at SEMA. They've been around for over 50 years, proudly made in the U.S. of A. And I use this stuff all the time. I think they have the Super Weld. That's the one part, quick dry, you know, couple of drops. Used that recently.
You were talking about stashing stuff around the house. You have multiple. I've got that. I've got like 4 bottles of the Super Weld.
Yes.
You know, in the glove box of the car, in the bathroom, in the junk drawer.
Yeah, man. JB Weld. And you can go to JB Weld. It's good for metal. It's good for wood. It's good for plastic. Don't glue it, JB Weld. Weld it. It's good at jbweld.com, and you can get it at Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It's JB Weld. All right. Let's see. Tempe, Arizona coming up. The Improv, September 18th and 19th. And Salt Lake City Wise Guys coming up October 2nd and 3rd. I'm your emotional support animal. You can go check out my book on Amazon. Leave a review. I will read it. And you can go check out the website, carcastshow.com, support the show there, if you would. And go check out our YouTube page, or you can go to Adam Carolla, or youtube.com/Adam Carolla, and see some stand-up there. Matt, what do you got?
The ZCon event is coming up, and I think we're going to make a stop over there, possibly on Tuesday, September 15th. I'll get some more details and let you guys know about it. But ZCon in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. And just a reminder that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. And that's 15% on top of the money GEICO could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? This is a deal you won't want to miss. There's never been a better time to switch to GEICO than now. And if you save an extra 15%, if you do it by October 7th. So jump on to GEICO.com to learn more. That's GEICO.com.